On To the Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To the Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To the Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
Hello there, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence. Hopefully the intelligence will come from my guests in this podcast. One of them is a very famous USC football player, and we are doing this at the new Annenberg facility at USC. And we have Jeremy Rosenberg, who was an assistant dean here for the last 5 years in the Annenberg School. And the two of you have written a book about Anthony Davis's experience, but it's not really an on-the-field book. It's a book about the consequences of playing football, particularly what happens to your brain. The book is called Kickoff Concussion. It has an introduction by a doctor that did pioneering research in this book, which I'm sure you'll talk about, Dr. Daniel Ammon from Orange County. The subtitle is How the Notre Dame Killer Recovered His Brain. So you were this great hero in the field. And the reason I love talking to you and having you come in and speak to our students here is it gives them both sides of the sport. You're a big fan of it. You felt it added a lot to your life. You went on to play professional ball and so forth. You got to see a lot of the world. On the other hand, you're a living proof of the damage that football as a rough sport can do. So why don't you just tell me what you try to say in this book and what it's all about?
Well, first of all, starting off about my problems with the concussion situation, it started with a gentleman by the name of Don Bockels, who went here as a pharmaceutical major, who became the head pharmacist at Cedars-Sinai. His hobby was taking photos of athletes, and I happened to be his favorite athlete. That's how I met. He had a whole library full of photos of me that I've never seen. And so we started conversing about injuries and how I got out of the game so early. You know, I had some issues with my weight. He said, but have you ever had your brain scanned? I said, no, I don't need it. He says, well, you've been hitting the head several times, and I know you've had a couple of concussions. You might have had more. And I said, have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Dr. Daniel Ammon? I says, no, not at all. So I had some episode with memory, and right after I talked about it, walking out of my house, forgetting that I've locked the door, did I lock it, going back and forth. And then the thing that turned me toward Dr. Ammon was I had an incident on the 405 freeway where I blanked out. I says, I need to get a hold of Don. So he arranged it, and that's how I realized that I had a problem. Then realizing also some of my colleagues, past and present, it had it even worse after, you know, meeting Dr. Ammon.
What year was that when you blanked out on the 405?
That was 2007.
So while we're talking here, students in my class are watching a very good Frontline PBS documentary, League of Denial, and it's all about how the National Football League basically denied that there was a problem here. And then most recently, the New York Times had an investigative piece in March of 2016 showing how there had been a deliberate cover-up of the significance of these injuries, and they made the comparison with the tobacco industry that concealed the bad effects of smoking and had phony science and so forth. In the case of the National Football League, when they went through the studies, it turns out they were relying on professional football teams to give them the data. These teams distorted the data. They left out 110% of the cases of people that had serious injury. And, you know, basically it's a cover-up. And so, but at the time when you discovered this, there wasn't much talk about concussion. Kids were still being encouraged to play football at an early age. And the negative consequence will really play down. Why? Because football, first of all, on a college level, is a way of these colleges finding meaning in their existence, as well as financial support. And then on the professional level, it's America's sport in terms of the audience it commands, the money that's generated. So what was the mood when you first discovered you had a problem from your football career? What was the reaction of people? Did they believe it? Did they think it was real?
Well, first of all, myself, when I met Eamon and I talking to him, I realized this is hokey pokey. This is a voodoo medicine. I mean, even though I'd had a problem, I said, you know something, I'm not gonna believe what this guy is talking about. And so he says, well, Anthony, first of all, you wanna hear the results of your scan. He says, how many concussions do you think you had? I said, I think I've had maybe two. He said, no, you had three. So if you had three, you probably had more. And then he says, you remember any incidents? I remember one time getting knocked out, don't remember part of the game. So I took a trip to Bass State, California when he put me on the supplement program. And I had been on the program. I've been on the program for about a month. I got there, but I left my supplements down in Southern California. Well, I was feeling better, but I found the effects of not taking it for 2 or 3 days. And I realized that I had a problem. And I went and contacted him. He said, well, we diagnosed you. You needed to stay on the product. And I, from that day on, I do not leave unless I have my supplements. That's daily. I take it religiously. So from that point, Dr. Eamon and his staff said, you know something, I like to do a NFL study. So what I did, arranged with him, was to go meet with the Southern California sector of the Retired Football Association here in Southern California. And he met with about 50 of us. And that's when we launched the program. While we were doing the book, Jeremy and I, it was like 115 guys who got scanned. He calls me the father of his brain study because I was the first guy. And so that's what escalated everything. Then also, you know, Dr. Bennett O'Malo, in combination with him, that raised, escalated the awareness of the concussion situation. And then the mother started to get involved. Should my kid play this game? It's a very game. And I became a major advocate of the fact that the more trauma you hit, and once you put a helmet on your head, the trauma starts. It doesn't go away. And you got to remember, when a kid is 12 years old putting a helmet on his head, the trauma begins. So you can figure, you realize that some guys who played Pop Warner football, which is maybe 3 years, then you got high school, 4 years, that's 7. Then you got college, that's 4 more, you know, that's 11. Then some guys play which I call the really serious, crucial years, 8, 9, 10 years of professional football. Now, Dr. Eamon says, you didn't play long in football because other injuries made you retire. Bad back, broke my leg, hurt my shoulder. He said, it was very fortunate you got out of the game when you did, because of your concussions. Visualize some guys playing 10 to 15 years. In the case of Junior Seau, he played 20 years of professional football. Prior to all other years he played, Pop Warner High School. You can't play 20 years of professional football without any consequences.
Yeah, I remember a very sad evening when you came in to speak in my class and we showed a movie about concussion and a family member of Junior Seau's family was there and, you know, discuss how painful that whole experience was and what it did to her father.
Well, I was very upset about that. When I saw her, it was very emotional for me. I feel a little guilty because when he had his first episode, I needed to get on the phone and call Junior, and I didn't do it. Get up here, and I didn't do it. Knowing him so many years when he was at USC here in the pros, and I still bothers me to this day that if could I have made that call, and he got here.
You were a three-letter athlete, right?
What, no, I was two.
Two, baseball and football.
And football.
Oh, I thought you played a little basketball.
Oh, no, I wasn't that good.
That's a different Anthony Davis.
That's a different
who had
Anthony.
A concussion also.
But I played on 5 national championship teams here.
Okay.
3 in baseball, 2 in football, and All-American in both.
You had a choice. You actually might have been a better baseball player than you were a football player, no? I'm not taking anything away from your football prowess, but you were, you know, headed for a good majors career, right?
Well, first of all, if I do it over, it's no football. I was the number one draft choice out of high school, Baltimore Orioles. And
baseball.
Most people thought that was my career. And to this day, if you talk to people that know anything about my career, he's a better baseball player. I think about that all the time. And even my late baseball coach, Rod Dados, his favorite word is Tiger. You got to play baseball. what you did on the football field was all right. Baseball is your game.
Yeah, that's what people have said about you, have looked at your life. So what got you to go into football? The glamour?
No, it wasn't glamour so much. It was financial. It was a family issues with, and it was money was right away. Baseball, I might have gone to minors for a while. But according to the guy who drafted me, said, and Jeremy was there interviewing him, he says, I'm in the big leagues in no time. But that was sort of sad to hear, too, because I thought I was going at least 2 or 3 years in the minor leagues. He says, no, we projected you to be in the big leagues at 19.
When you say the money, though, I mean, they gave you a scholarship at USC?
Or? Well, I had a scholarship to play two sports.
AD, tell how much money you got for the World Football League deal that you took instead of a minor league baseball salary that would have put you in, like, Bluefield, West Virginia.
Well, it was back in the day, I signed a 5-year, $1.8 million contract, which is a lot of money in those years. So how's a kid going to turn that down from the humble beginnings he's come from? So I'm thinking about all the different things that I struggled through. My mother, who to this day I still look out for and take care of. So that was one of the major factors of why I did what I did.
Well, tell me about the humble beginnings. Because, I've been watching film clips of you, and there's no mention on ESPN or on USC's football of any of your background or what you did before you got here. All we see is this guy running around the field, getting in harm's way.
I don't know if you're in the business of really talking about my childhood, but maybe that can change a little bit if I'm that important of the program and the school overall. I don't know why, but it made me the athlete and the person that I am, my background. I really didn't have a father influence. My father was a devout alcoholic, which I call him, I can say it, I call him a sociopathic ignoramus. Not the fact that, that he is but he portrayed himself that way. And plus he had an alcohol problem. And so I really didn't have any proper guidance. When I should have been getting nurtured about the world I was stepping into, especially in the days I grew up in the Jim Crow era anyway, and didn't really know what to face in the public eye, but behind doors I was mistreated along with mother siblings. And I don't know, my mother kept us together. My mother always wanted to put us in a different environment so we can flourish in different areas because she realized we had some talent in our family. My brother's an attorney, done real well, went to your alma mater, Cal. My daughter went to Cal, and my sister went here, USC. So she knew, but she had to battle his alcoholism, his abusiveness to keep everything together. So that's one of the reasons I drove and did right away. Now, if I'd have been nurtured, it might have been a different story.
But, you talk about the Jim Crow days, and here we are in Los Angeles, and you think, well, it wasn't the Deep South. But I remember in class you once told the students that you would stand on one building over there that you guys called the Ghetto Steps.
VKC. The steps.
Yeah.
It was pretty much where the minorities hung out, the blacks, because back in the day when I was here, the majority of the blacks that went here were on the football team or athletic team, either basketball, track, or football. Majority of us was football. But it didn't mean it isolated the rest because whites and everyone else came and joined us too. But, when you had a break between class, we all went to the Ghetto Steps.
Well, I remember doing a year of graduate work at Syracuse University. That was 1958, where Jim Brown had been and right. Ernie Davis right. and others. And there on Marshall Street, right down that main drag, you go in there and the black students were sitting at one corner and one table. Right. This is in the north in Syracuse. But, yet SC was a way out, right? SC was.
You got to remember back in the Jim Crow years, the problem of discrimination was in the Deep South, if you know anything about American history, from Texas to Florida. That was the heart of it. But when you went northeast, if you went southwest, you saw sprinkles of it, but the majority of it was in the South. And so Jim Brown, I've had conversations with Jim Brown. See, the only reason Jim Brown got to play because all of the four running backs got injured to Syracuse. He went on and became this great, All-American, and should have won the Heisman itself. So, that he told me the story of how he went to Texas, Deep Texas, when they played in the Sugar Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, and that they were refused to let the team play if Jim Brown played. So his whole team collectively said, if you're not going to let him play, we're all going home. But that's what happened because he was a star.
Well, SC was involved in a similar incident, wasn't?
Well, it was a 1970 game, which I'm part of. Matter of fact, the producer might be here tonight. His name is Kerry McCluggage, who's working on this project. And SC played in the first integrated game.
In the SEC.
In the SEC. Whereas the George Wallace at the time was the governor. The legendary Bear Bryant was the coach.
It was Alabama.
And, you know, Alabama was unbelievable. Like, it was so segregated.
But Bear Bryant was in on it. He wanted to integrate.
No, he always wanted to integrate.
Yes.
I had the privilege of sitting with him in 1975 when I won the award, the most valuable player for ABC television, the most valuable player awards won on television. He was also awarded, and he sat there and told me, verbatim, he says, Anthony, I get tabbed as being a devout racist, but I've always wanted to integrate the SEC. And I said, well, Coach, you know, you're the big name in the SEC. He said, well, I always wanted to have integration. And I hated the fact that another player that was from Alabama named Clarence Davis, whose family actually moved to California, went to East LA College and came to SC, two-year All-American, was right there in the backyards of Bear Bryant. He mentioned that. And he says, but a lot of blacks during that period of time didn't even consider going to Alabama in the schools because they didn't allow blacks to even participate and go to schools there. Their attitudes were, well, get out of high school, get a job, and that's it. Either sharecropping or whatever, working in the factories or whatever. The football was out. And Barrett explained it. He was hurt by that because he was tabbed as like the George Wallaces of that era.
You know, right. Chapter 4, I think, of the book, yeah. Which is titled NFL, right. Not for long or...
You can say it.
I'm not going to say
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you know. But I carry that little thing. That's one of the reasons I wear the symbol of this ring. I don't wear the ring because I wear the symbol of what a 90-year-old man said to me. I know you don't like referring to the N-word, but this is what that old man said. 90-year-old guy. I saw him in Sub-CW Chris down in Western South Central Los Angeles.
Well, what ring is that?
It says NFL. This is NFL ring. This is NFL Player Association ring. Oh, okay. This is states that I played in the league.
Okay.
But there's other things that I added to it.
Yeah.
And this man helped me add it to it. He says, I hope we don't get shut down.
Oh, go ahead. This is public radio. We can
public
talk.
Well, anyway, the gentleman was looking at me and says, you know, you're Anthony Davis. And, you know, I've watched you play and saw your pro career. And he says, yeah, I know the unfortunate thing, you got injured. He said, but you see that ring you got on your hand, son? It means three things to me. NFL, not for long, and nigga for life. I said, wow, why did he say that? Yeah, that's why he's.
This was a white guy?
It was a black guy.
A black guy.
90 years old. He said, I'm 90 years old. I've seen it all. I've seen a man lynched. I've seen a man shot. I've seen everything. I'm from the Deep South.
And the chapter of the book begins with you saying, my mom, Velma, she was born a slave. Okay, we called it sharecropping down in Texas. You know, dot, dot, dot. And she wouldn't let you go play, right, in any SEC school. She wanted you to play here or somewhere
I was getting recruited and just said, hey, he's not going anywhere in the South. He said, all the letters come to the high school for him, throw in the trash.
So let me get it back to this issue because you've been a pioneer. You've been a pioneer in a number of ways. But, you know, everybody around SC, what they know about you is you had it made. You were the great star. You saved SC. You're the Notre Dame killer. You'd had this great, you're a legend, right? Here you're a legend. And yet, there's another side to it, right? Injuries, you know, what happens after. Why don't you give us that picture and talk about a particular issue of concussions, which have been played down until recently.
And I'll just add in at the beginning here before AD goes that in the book we have two images, two brain scans, right? And when Dr. Amen was scanning your brain as one of those 150 football players he'd scanned, he analyzed your brain and said at age 54 when you got scanned, you had the brain equivalent to an 85-year-old. So then after you started doing, you know, your work with him, I think you scanned it down to the equivalent of a 65-year-old. So while he may look good, before you and I knew him, obviously you were a mess, and inside, obviously, even a bigger mess.
Well, I realize it because, you know, looking back, I made bad decisions. I was irrational, anger, just associated myself with bad people. And I realized, God, look, did you do all of this? Could you do a review of your life sometime? You know how you sit around, you sort of give a review on your life. Say, why did I do that? If I didn't do that, I wouldn't have these problems today. From a societal situation, business situation, financial situation, family situation, my choices were off base. I feel that I'm focused now. I'm situated in a good situation with my business. I have good people around me.
What was the response of this college or any college? Because you know a lot of these football players. And did the college take any responsibility for any of the injuries or care?
No, and I'm a big advocate of that. The NCAA and NFL, like you just mentioned earlier, now that they have admitted now, I think it's time for the NCAA, especially the game of football, and the NFL, they need to step up and do something to help these guys. Most guys are not going professionally. And if you have, and I know every guy that puts a helmet on their head has brain trauma. And like I would like to see, if you're going to play this game, you should have a comprehensive supplement program. You should get a hyperbaric treatment. And in the school, the NCAA should make sure each program has that program along with the NFL. Since the NFL has now admitted it to the situation, but I believe that they're going to start putting limits on guys how long they play based on a yearly scan. This guy's walking around here, they had 8 or 9 concussions still playing.
Let me ask you a question, because for a young black kid growing up now in L.A., football or basketball, these are the ways that they think about getting out.
Out of the hood.
Right? So you're holding up a model, the media is holding up a model of, all right, you know, maybe learning is not as important, maybe school's not as important, but, you know, if you're big enough, fast enough, you're going to have a way out here. And there are probably a lot of kids you run into and say, hey, you're Anthony Davis.
When I stress to a kid and a mother and a father that walks up and says, listen, you might be a great athlete, but academics is the way out, not sports.
Do you think the school should do more or the college?
I think every school should do more. I think they should monitor every student athlete that comes here and make sure they have certain pars to play. If you can perform great on the field, you better perform in the classroom just as well. Or be a participant and be able to be functional in these classrooms, but most of them are not, nationwide. It's a problem nationwide.
What about the contradiction of the coaches getting these enormous salaries and the students getting so little?
Well, that's a problem too. I mean, here, you know, the thing, when I tell guys who've been students being recruited, I said, listen, a coach can be there. They get $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million a year. You don't get that. You should participate in some of that salary. And you got to also, too, don't ever come to a school where a coach says you're going to be this, you're going to be that, and next year he's gone. Don't base your decision on going to a school based on what a coach tells you. You base your decision on the school that fits your need for the future.
You took the 1.5 and bolted before your graduation.
Right.
So you are not just saying that as somebody who hasn't been through
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
You've told me many times you regret that and would love to come back.
I regret it, but the thing that I had, I think I had going better than most guys, I had some focus. I knew I wanted to do something outside of the game, basically what I'm doing today. A lot of guys don't have that.
What are you doing today?
I'm in the real estate development business. I'm with a group called Greenlaw Partners. It's about 7 of us from USC.
Frankly, and I've gotten to know you a little bit, and frankly, I don't see the damage. I mean, so tell me about concussions. Tell me about what the downside, because you present as a very together person. What's the hard side of this experience?
Getting knocked down. I mean, just having it all and hitting that valley floor and struggle trying to climb that mountain again. That's the toughest thing. And they're realizing that you made so many mistakes, you were off base, you were hurt. And frankly, you were pretty much dying, because I was headed to pre-Alzheimer's.
I mean, what, you couldn't think?
I wasn't focused. I couldn't focus.
You told me you made a lot of mistakes.
I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. Business-wise, across the board, a lot of mistakes. I'm very fortunate to be able to sit here and tell you that I'm focused now and ready and been doing this for the last 7-8 years in terms of having my act together.
It's difficult for someone who hasn't been in your shoes to understand the life of any successful athlete. I know from my own students, there's a lot of jealousy. You know, if you talk about student athlete, yeah, well, but they get this and they get that and they got a chance ahead. There's a lot of resentment And, you know, we pay tuition too, and we work hard. And when you discovered that you had problems, what was the response of the school or your old friends, of the media? What is sports writers? Were they aware that there was a problem of concussions? Was it ever, when you started talking about this, how were you received by the reporters you used to know?
Thought I was wacko. They said, he's smoking something. Listen, you know, when I started involved this, I wasn't aware. I was very ignorant of it myself. I've been educated for the last 8 years on this topic. They thought I was nuts. They said, oh, you know, he must have had a drinking problem. He must have had a drug problem. Because a lot of that stuff floated around, too. You know, lost all his money, did this, this, blah, 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 blah. Which a lot of guys have substance problems even today when they get out because of this. All they're trying to do is combat the pain and stuff. But the bottom line is, those are the kind of things that that rumors were flying around, even through the press, and even when people see me, oh, you know, that's AD. He used to.
But isn't there a kind of corruption of the media? They're making a living off guys like you. Papers get sold, TV ratings go up. There's a whole industry around sports. You're the bad news bear here. You're bringing news that even with the helmet, that's not safe.
No.
This is something that AD and I would talk about a lot when we would meet up on the
How'd you guys meet anyway? I should reintroduce you, Jeremy, because there's this guy keeps piping up his voice. What's your connection with AD?
I was bugged about doing this book since I was the father of this concussion movement. And so I conversed, and then I said, well, I thought about Annenberg. And then I called assistant, a person who worked under...
This is the Annenberg School of Communications and Journalism.
Right.
Yes.
And so they said, we're looking for a guy that can work with me on putting a book together.
Yeah.
And he was recommended by the Annenberg staff.
And you were assistant dean here.
I was. At that point, I wasn't yet.
Well, let me put you on the spot, Jeremy Rosenberg. Yeah. You were part of the establishment here at a major university, major academically as well as in athletics. Mm-hmm. And when you started doing... the story about here's one of SC's great heroes. Did people want to know about the downside?
I was not, I think I was a consultant at that time, so I wasn't actually part of the administration at that moment. But when the book came out, I was. And, you know, AD made it clear from the start that this could be a book on the real, that we weren't going to sugarcoat anything. If he wants to talk about the quote-unquote ghetto steps at VKC and what life was like on campus then as opposed to what it was like at a UC school like UCLA where Angela Davis was, as you say, rocking her fro, he said, let's put that all in there. So, you know, AD wanted it to be, you know, a full look, warts and all, at his life, at college life, at professional life. Frankly, administrators here didn't ask what I was doing and didn't ever, you know, read manuscripts in advance, didn't ask to. So, I wish I had gotten to have some kind of debate or discussion with people, but, you know, frankly, they maybe in keeping with that AD had disappeared a little bit off people's radar, you know, they weren't checking up on me and saying, what are you up to? What are you doing? I will say that when you asked, you talked before about concussions and the electronic media and how everyone is, you know, in a way, my word, involved in a conspiracy of sorts or a collusion of sorts, or they're all connected. And I wanted to jump on that. That's what AD and I would talk about a lot on when we meet up to write the book. What's the future of pro football? You two, I know, are big NFL or pro football fans. I'm more of a world football soccer fan, so it wouldn't hurt me as much if that game disappeared. But we talk all the time, like, could it go away? And when you scenario plan it out, I think that it's highly unlikely that the NFL will disappear because, you know, yes, there's a lot of fans, but more importantly, just like the Pentagon has, when they get a primary contractor and a million subcontractors, you know, there are parts being made for some ship that isn't even needed by that branch of the armed services in so many congressional districts. The NFL has so many media partners, streaming media partners, so the new media companies are involved, all the advertisers. You could think of, instead of a factory building a ship part in a different district, you could think of the stadiums as being 30 factories, you know, production factories for football games. So as much as I might be fine with football going away and it just becoming a virtual sport where people can still gamble based on, you know, VR and AR and they can still gather like an esports arena to watch the game and cheer and tailgate, I think that it's highly unlikely that there's going to be anything more than incremental change, despite what the NFL just admitted.
You know, you bring up an uncomfortable point. Yeah, I'm an Oakland Raiders season ticket fan. I've been there since 1960s. You know, I'm a hypocrite.
And my soccer players bang heads, heading the ball, and
okay,
getting concussions.
Okay, and I'll admit that. But then you know, the fact is, you do hear people tell you, no, sports are great. And, you know, they bring camaraderie. You know, you learn a lot. So I've heard you say that, you know. So, you know, let's wrap this up with where are we going with this thing?
Well, this is my prediction when it comes to organized football. The more the concussion is out publicly amongst mothers with sons, it's going to start right there. The less they play, that's going to be the diminish of the future farm teams of college and professional football. And I believe if it does continue, both on the collegiate and the professional level, I believe it's going to be a scanning program on how long a guy can play. If you have some serious head injuries, you're not going to play anymore. And I believe that the NFL eventually will scan each player's brain every year. That's where it's headed. And make a determination of whether or not this guy's going to play or not. And you have guys that play on Sunday who fake the protocol, the concussion protocol, to get back out there. But down the road, you're going to pay for the I believe that's where it's going. And oh, by the way, as we speak, you know, there's been 8 related deaths this past year. And concussions are up 50% in the National Football League from last year. So it's coming to a crossroad. And they have to make a decision what they do. I know it's a lot of money. It means a lot of sponsorship. And you got 32 collective richest men in the world that control the National Football League. So you got to make a decision. And you got to let them know, listen, you're playing a football game. It's a great game, but it's a dangerous game. And you got to let everybody know the consequences of you playing this game and what the repercussions will be after you play 5 to 6 or maybe 10 years.
Can it be made safe?
No. You can put a tank around your head. No one can see it, but you can hear that. That's what your brain feels like when you get hit. It shakes. You can put a 6-inch wall around that head, but their brain is soft matter. It's like cottage cheese. And every time it bangs against the walls, that's damage. That's trauma.
Are there sane sports, and is baseball or maybe basketball one of them, where you don't suffer that much? And maybe football... If, you know, certainly if it were not so lucrative to so many people financially, maybe football would be history. No,
yeah, it's very lucrative. I mean, it's the number one sport in the country. I don't know what they're going to do. They're at a crossroads. They got to make a decision what they're going to do. I mean, I'll probably be long gone before something happens. No one will probably be in this room before it happens. I might be the tail end of my life, but I see it changing dramatically.
I'm telling you, holograms, VR, AR, you can still gamble, you can still gather, if you can still tailgate, just won't be any concussions because Homo sapiens won't be involved.
Turn it virtual. Jeremy Rosenberg, Anthony Davis, a great legend, USC, one of the great football centers, and I want to thank you for coming in here for this edition of Sheer Intelligence Podcast. You've added a lot of intelligence to the enterprise.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for another edition of Sheer Intelligence. My guests were Anthony Davis and Jeremy Rosenberg, producers Josh Shear and Rebecca Mooney, with a big assist from Sebastian Grubar at the USC Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism.